Is there an extra sheet anyway?
I'm sorry, are there not enough? Well, you can share. No, there's more. They're all there. They're there in the paperclip.
Oh, no, you didn't take them all.
Yeah.
Okay. Welcome. This is welcome. This is Jeff Sachs. You have more than one copy there. Jeff Sachs. We've taken a little detour, and we were looking at some of the issues that have come up over the year in the Gemara as they play out in Halacha. I think this will be the last week we'll do this. Next week is the last year before Pesach. We'll see. Maybe we'll do something special Pesach related. And then, anyway, after Pesach, we'll get back in full swing back to Masechet Kedushin.
And related to, I think that one of the things that I heard last year was that in this whole process, the Ketubah isn't really necessary.
La Pitom. What do you mean?
What is it?
No. A ketubah is certainly necessary. Ketubah is in other words, there's two different things. When you get married, you're doing lots of different things. One is you're making a masay kedushin. Yes. So if a man is makadesh a woman without a ketubah, they're completely married. If she has relations with another man, it's adultery. If she's now prevented from marrying anybody else. But there is a rabbinic obligation of great import to have a ketubah. No, right, it's also Chazal say it's also to marry a woman without a ketubah. But if you do, you're married.
And is it also to be contingent to marry a woman if it was lost?
Ah, so that's an interesting question, which just came up in my house for some reason.
No.
Because my daughter is getting married in a couple of weeks, so this is how it came up. In Israel, when you get married, who got married in Pitzarts? Okay, you have your ketubah. Where is it? On the wall? Okay. Same? In a drawer, wherever it is. So when you get married in Chutz Laaretz, you have a ketubah, which you have to bring, or the rabbi brings before you a form, you know, that gets filled out, or you have it custom made, and that's your ketubah. In Israel, when you get married, there are two ketubot. You register to get married here at the Moetzad Datit in Efrat, and they give you two ketubot. The text is identical. And now, by the way, there's a new fangled innovation in the Rabbanut. I don't know if it's in every single Moetza Datit, but here in Efrat we do this, that whoever the Masada Kedushin is, you can have a boy and a girl from Efrat, and the Masada Kedushin can be from someplace else. But if you register to get married in the Moetza Datit here in Efrat, so the Rav of Efrat, who issues the marriage license. In other words, on your marriage license, it doesn't matter who your Masada Kedushin is, right? On your marriage license, it's signed by the Rav Efrat, which, of course, for the whole history of Efrat, was the Rav Shlomo Riskin. He should live and be well. I had a wonderful experience this week. Last week, I brought Rabbi Bravender to see Rabbi Riskin. Two great men who worked together for many years. Of course, Rabbi Bravender is Rosh Hashiva here on Web Yeshiva. Unfortunately, you know, they're both getting on in years. Rabbi Riskin is now retired as the Rav of Efrat. He has no samchut. He has no official, at least, authority in town. And in the meantime, we don't have another rabbi. So what do you do when you don't have a rabbi in a town? Well, it happens we don't have an assistant rabbi. We don't have an assistant rabbi. We have a Moetza Datit that functions, that takes care of the kashrut and the eruv and the mikvaot and all those other things. But the law is that if there's no functioning rabbi in the town, who signs the marriage certificate?
Yeah.
Who signs the kashrut certificates? So whoever the nearest rav is, the next town nearest, is Rav Samet, who's the rav of Migdal Oz, is the Rav pro tempore of Efrat. He signs the ketubot, and he signs the marriage licenses. So when you get married in Efrat, they give you two ketubot. One is just a piece of paper. The other is a little fancier. It comes in a folder. They're identical in the text, but this new innovation is that here Rav Samet, and whoever the Rav of Efrat will be when he's elected, he fills out the ketubah. You don't have this thing anymore at the Chosin's Tish where, you know, you're filling it out as you go, which is, by the way, you know, like a recipe for disaster. because you make one mistake, you can cross it out, but it's not nice, right? In other words, on the date, on the day, on how to spell the name of the town. Now, in Israel, it's very obvious how to spell the names of towns. But remember, in Europe, that wasn't the case. What is the proper Hebrew spelling of the town Kaslovich?
Buchach.
Or Buchach, or whatever. So you know that there were like Rabban Poskim. Poskim put out these booklets of the proper spelling of different town names for Ketubot, and even more important, for Gittin. Because if you get the spelling of the town name wrong in the Ketubah, B'dieved, you're okay.
I had a great story yesterday about somebody, in Abu Ghosh, there's some kosher catering hall. So I get married in Abu Ghosh.
Uh-huh.
What do you write on the Ketubah? Abu Ghosh, Dibonavi Tekonel. So they don't know what they do. They wrote, the stuff they wrote, Abu Ghosh, Al Yad Yerushalayim.
So now when you go to a wedding where the marriage license is being issued by the Motzei Datit at the Chassan's Tish, you just have the Edom sign. You don't have this whole thing where you're filling out the date. So these two ketubot, the fancier one, if you want, you can go to an artist or a calligrapher, etc., and have a copy made that way. And that's the one. So the Edom sign on both of these ketubot. The paper one goes back to the Moetza Datit and is on file. And when you do that, that's when they issue you your marriage license, which you need in order to open a joint bank account, in order to get a joint, whatever you need to prove that you to go to the Misrata Pnim, to go to Misrata Pnim and change your status from single to married. And it's Dave on. So last year, when my son got married, when you get married, you have to bring your parents' ketubah or their tudat nisuin. So they said, "Never, oh, it's not a problem." Because when I got married in 1996, I was living in Efrat. We registered. I was working in Ortura, and we registered. So they still had it on file. They still have my ketubah on file here in Efrat. So if you lose it, God forbid, your house burns down and your ketubah goes up in smoke. So you're right. It's usur to live. It's usur to live with your wife without a ketubah, and you have to write a new ketubah. But yeah, it's all in Issur D'Rabbanan. But here in Eretz Yisrael, the real ketubah is the one that's on file in the state. So technically speaking, you would not need to have another ketubah written. But that ketubah that's written after the fact is not the same ketubah. It's written in past tense. First of all, you know, in many cases, the Edim that signed on the ketubah, maybe they're not around anymore to sign on it. If the original Edim are there, they sign it if they're able to, but that's not always possible. But it's a ketubah that testifies that there had been a ketubah that was written at such and such a time, such and such a place.
There's a facsimile. In other words, they copy the fields onto another one. They did that when we were all searching for our parents' birth certificates in the old country.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And when they finished the war, they couldn't go back to their town, so they got facsimiles. Right. In other words, they just copied.
Right.
So I saw that it's my grandfather's signature. Right. So I went looking for the real one, and I found it. But it's a different story.
Right. So there's something called the Madrich. It's a kind of like a rabbi's handbook. Yeah. The rabbinical Hamadrich. There've been a few. There's a brand new edition that just came out this year. I have it, and in there they have like all the sample forms, sample ketubah, sample tanaim, sample. And one of the sample forms that they have in there is the rewritten. I can scan it and send it out on list. Anyways. No, that's the practice in the state of Israel. One copy of the ketubah is kept on file, and the other the couple keeps. The fancier one, the couple keeps. So that's the standard. And that's, you know, although I'm not such a fan of state, you know, I'd prefer a little more separation of religion and state. But in this case, it's a good procedure. It's a good procedure. But generally speaking, in Chutz Laaretz, and by the way, it must have been much more common in the old days. God forbid, have any of you had a serious fire in your homes in the history of your of your life.
No,
no.
Everything's made out of stone in Israel.
Right. No, but not just in Israel, in America.
Right here.
What? You could lose something, although you know your important things you keep. You know, either your ketubah is framed and it's on the wall, or it's should be with your important documents, your passports, your people lose their passports. You know, my parents had like a lock box. It wasn't a safe, but it was like a fireproof box, and it had their wills and their ketubah and there's their birth certificates, you know, well, our birth certificates.
I've noticed that you know, people have these fancy ketubot and they put them on the wall. A lot of times they're like in the sunlight and their signature is.
Yes. My brother-in-law, who's usually here, but is excused this week because they're in the middle of Sheva Brachot for their daughter. It's been a big year in the extended family. So their ketubah, I keep telling him that his ketubah needs exactly because of that. Yeah, you have to. Yeah.
If you can get the edim, then
you should get the. You should ideally get the edim or the original edim, and if not, they should be because they're still like a roshim. Okay. Anyway, let's go back to the Aruch HaShulchan. This is the Aruch HaShulchan in Sif Membet. Sif Membet. Evan.
Simon
Membet. Ebenezer Simon Membet. So,
that's the
time. Simon Membet, 42.
Second page.
Yeah, okay, I got you.
I think you gave out the first page.
No, no, there's only one page.
It's one page.
The title at the beginning of the page. The Simon is at the top.
Printed in two lines.
Okay, anyway, we've wasted enough time. What about edim that are no good? So it's like you didn't get married. Edim can be no good for a variety of reasons. They can be no good because the edim themselves are related to each other or are related to, let's say, one of the principles. That's called the puzzle of Korov. Right? You can be a puzzle aid if you're what's called a nogeya bidavar, which is a little less. Applicable in the case of marriage, but in dine mamonot, if you have a financial interest in the outcome of the case, you can't be an aid. It's not the halacha, but there's a shaila if the Masader Kedushin himself can be one of the aidim. And in places where the Masader Kedushin is being paid for his services, so there were those that felt the Masader Kedushin can't be. You know, this happens at non-religious weddings. You have to schlep along, you know, two kosher witnesses. That's what we saw last time in the Aruch HaShulchan, that the minog, the Aruch HaShulchan, where did the Aruch HaShulchan live? Yeah. Fez.
No.
Polish.
Cairo. Yemen. Salonika.
Navardic.
It was Navardic. Where's Navardic?
In Eastern Europe.
That's what we used to call Lita. But of course, remember that what we call Lita, Jewish Lita, does not correspond to the borders of what today is the country of Lithuania, which is a much smaller country than what the Lita was, the kingdom of Lithuania, and what Jewish Lithuania is. It's today in Belarus. It's today in Belarus, what used to be called White Russia, right? But today is this corrupt little puppet state of Putin called Belarus. But it was the part of the Russian when he lived there. It's part of the Russian Empire. So he says the minog where he was from was that the chazan and the gabbai, the chazan and the shamis were the kavua edim. Right, because you knew that they were kosher, they were holy men, and they were always there. And right, but you go to a non-religious wedding today, and you have to schlep along. Yeah, I was once a couple times. I was Masada Kedushin, like for Tzohar, things like that. So you go to these weddings, and so I had to ask two people to come along to be edim. So you can't always get two people. So can the Masada Kedushin himself be one of the edim? So the answer is yes. Although it's not so widely done, but there is a shaila. If the Masada Kedushin is being paid, so he's a nogeya bedavar. Because let's say you find out afterwards something was wrong with the Kedushin. So he's going to have to give back the money. So he's got an incentive to overlook, you know, the problem that that arises afterwards. That's not the halacha lamaaseh, but it's probably a good practice. It's probably a good practice that the Masada Kedushin not also serve as an aid. But in a pinch, we would allow it, unless, of course, the Masada Kedushin is marrying off his own daughter, his sister, his whomever it is.
To see if there was somebody there whose kippah looked like it actually had been on the head of before they walked.
Right. It didn't say the kippah didn't say the wedding of Marjorie and Arthur.
Yeah. So it
wasn't like super cold.
Yeah. So anyway, we certainly know about Adim that, you know, you'd find out the case, it was their apostle afterwards. You know, we'd say that the marriage is no good. But what about the large category of Adim that are posel derabonon? In addition to the psuli edut that the Torah specifies or that Chazal enumerated as prohibited mina Torah, Chazal added a variety of things. For Krovim, Chazal extended it. I mean, you know, all Ashkenazi Jews are at most fourth cousins, right? I mean, no, seriously. It's, you know, like the furthest distance that you have to another Ashkenazi Jew, particularly if, let's say, if you limit it to Eastern European Ashkenazi Jews versus Western European Ashkenazi Jews, right? But if you're an Eastern, who amongst us is not an Eastern European Ashkenazi Jew? There are no purebred Yekis amongst us. There are no Sephardim amongst us, although we'd be happy to have them join. Right? So at most, we're all, if you looked hard enough on a family tree, you discover we all have some connection. Right? So it can't be that everybody's possible to everybody else. There's a limit to how closely related you are. But Chazal extended it beyond what the Torah required. So what if you get married with posel edim, dirabonon? So what do you have in that marriage? I don't think a fourth cousin is posel dirabonon, but there are other relations that are posel dirabonon. And there's a variety of other types of categories that Chazal said were also dirabonon. So let's say you have edim that are posel dirabonon. You do the wedding, and you find out that the edim were posel dirabonon. What's the status of the marriage now?
The right to their marriage.
The Torah says they're married. The rabbis say they're not. So how could that be? Right? According to the Torah says it's usur for it to have relations with another man. The rabbis say it's mutter. How could that be? So obviously that's not what it means. Gamblers is an English. What? Right? Gamblers are an example of an issur derabanan, right? Because they're considered unreliable, they're considered untrustworthy, unseemly, right? But minat Torah, they're if they're otherwise okay, they're kosher aid. So what's the status of this marriage? If the couple wants to remain married, which presumably they do, so you can just do a maaseh kedushin again with kosher edim. And if they want to say, well, you know,
it was nice.
No, since we, you know, you get off the hook, right? You get off the hook. This is, I've mentioned this before. It's a famous episode of Gilligan's Island. Right, that Thurston Howell III and his wife, remember on Gilligan's Island, right there in this deserted island, but somehow they had like these everlasting batteries in the transistor radio, and they were within radio reception, and they'd be sitting around and they'd say, I wonder what's in the news, and they'd click, and you'd hear the announcer going, in the news. And he says that the Reverend such and such was found to be a fraud, he was defrocked, he was never a priest, and he was the Masada Kedushin for Thurston Howell III and Lovey. So they were never married, because Thurston and Mrs. Howell the third. So what happens? So Mrs. Howell decides she's off the hook. because they were never married. She can now live the bachelorette's lifestyle until they decide they love each other. So what are they going to do? They're on a deserted island. What's this? So the skipper, a skipper is authorized to marriage, except the skipper is only authorized to perform marriages at sea. The ship was shipwrecked.
So they built a raft.
But of course they trust Gilligan to build the raft, and he's no good at anything. So they go out into the lagoon, and the raft sinks, you know, as he says, "I now pronounce you man and wife."
No.
So they discover the Eden were psulim. The wife can say, "You know what? Taka, on second thought, I don't want to be married." So what would we say? So Chazal say she was never married. She can go marry a Kohen now. She can marry anybody now. Torah says, wait a second, she can't do any such thing. She is married. So
Scrub said, it feels about this, where the Knox was discovered, they were never really divorced.
I this is a different show. This is not a classic. I only know from the classics. So
ran Gilligan's Island.
Not in reruns. So, I trust Scrubs was a medical drama. Yeah.
I wouldn't call it a drama.
So anyway, so the Rambam says if they decide to divorce, they need a get. So look at Sif here, Sif Mem. Katava Rambam beperek Dalid Hamakadesh bepsulei edut. If you get married with posel edim, but posel, real posel edim. Posel edim shel Torah. Eina mikudeshet. Bepsulei edut shel divrei sofrim. O be'edim sheheim safek psulei Torah. Im ratza lechnos hozeru makadesh b'ksherim. So then, if it was posel edim legamre, so then they were never married. Right, it's like doing masek kedushin with something which is pachot mishave pruta. Definitionally, it wasn't a kedushin act, but if it was psulei edut shel divrei sofrim. So divrei sofrim is a complicated term. What does divrei sofrim mean? So it's not exactly derabbanan. It means different things in the mouths of different Rishonim. The Sofrim are who? Scribes. The Sofrim are generally a nickname for the Nevi'im. Not Moshe, but for other Nevi'im. Some Rishonim use Divrei Sofrim to mean Dirabanan. It's a synonym for what we mean Dirabanan. The Rambam uses it as a kind of either, I'll say Dirabanan plus or Dioraita minus, but very close to Dioraita. It might mean something which is Dioraita, but not explicit, and only learned out through what we call the Midot Shetar Nedreshet Ben, the hermeneutical principles. So that, in other words, it's in the Torah, meaning it has the force of a Torah law, but it had to kind of, we had to access it via the Rabbanan. So the Rambam said that Aruch HaShulchan quotes the Rambam, who says that. That if it's with posel edim midivrei sofrim, or edim that are safek psulei Torah, which means they might not be posel, maybe they are posel, maybe they're not posel. So if he wants to remain married to her, so you just do the Masek Kedushin again with Kosher Edim. V'im lo ratza lechnos, if he decides, you know, I dodged that bullet, right? Srichim get mimena misafik. It's a funny, what's funny about the Aruch HaShulchan's phraseology?
Get mimena?
Yeah. Mimenu, right? I'm sorry. Sricha get mimenu. She needs a get from him. Misafik. Because maybe according to the Torah, they're not divorced. They're not married in the first place. Vafilu kafra ha'isha v'hikhisha et ha'edim. And if the woman like denies and stamps her foot and says they weren't the Edim. Well, she, you know, she says we were never really married. It was no good. V'amra lo kidashtani. Right? Kofin ota lekach get. Because there were people there. There were Edim there that said it did happen. V'chein din kol kiddush safek. And any time where there's a safek about whether or not the kiddushin did or did not occur, we require a get. We require a get misafek, because maybe they were married. Oh, so if we require her to accept this get,
she's been married.
Yeah. So then, even a get misafek means she's also to a kohen, because you can't. A grusha marrying a kohen is an isur Torah, and a suffek diraita lechumra.
I feel like we might have discussed this before, but since theoretically one can be married in other ways than a ketubah, and if they were they were living together intending to be married, they're having relations with an intention that represents marriage, and he's supporting her, giving more than seven puta all the time. Why aren't they actually married, even though?
Because even when you get married, in other words, we did talk about this a couple of weeks ago, and I think you're the one that asked the question.
Yeah. Unclear still.
Since I see you didn't bring your notebook to check, I'll tell you. No, in other words, the Mishnah says that Isha. Our universal way of doing it is with kesef, with a shavet pruta, with something of monetary value, and the universal custom is to do it with a ring. Shtar is not the ketubah. The shtar, the marriage document through which you can initiate the kedushin, is you write out on the shtar, Hare at mikudeshet li b'shtar ze, kedat Moshe v'Yisrael, and you give her the shtar. In addition to that, you have to give her a ketubah. The ketubah is something else. Nobody does that, maybe because it ain't so romantic or who knows what, but that's universally not the thing. And the Mishnah mentions the idea that the sexual act, the marital act itself, can be the agency for creating kedushin if it's done with that proper intent, and there have to be edim. We talked about this at the time, about how you do edim for tefillah b'mikvah for a woman who's mitkayeret, right? The edim, meaning the edim go in, and the edim aren't there at the intimate moment, but they're edim to the fact that these people were alone together. That is our I wouldn't call it a minhag, but the practice of what we call yichud. Right? Yichud, that after the chuppah, the couple goes into a private room and the Edim stand outside, right? That's, they go inside to check that they're private, and they're, right? So, that, but it's not a universal, right? Sfardim don't do yichud. But that practice is a kind of like a nod to them, and not that the couple actually engages in the marital act in the 7 or 9 or 13 minutes that they're in the cheder yichud, but it represents the intimate possibilities that come about from being together in secluded privacy, right? But that's not the bi'ah, right? That creates the kiddushin. So that's got nothing to do with ketubah. And if they live together, right? If they live together, you know, intimately, as some people do, they used to call it
living in
sin. Now they just call it living, right?
There is no sin.
So shacking up. So if they do, so that doesn't create kiddushin without the intent. Anyway, even though the Mishnah keeps open this possibility, in the times of the Gemara already, we have the statement, Rav Mangid Aman de Kadesh Bibia. Rav would issue lashes to somebody that would be so brazen to use that. And it was already discontinued in the time of the Gemara, and certainly in our day.
I promise not to ask the question for time.
So this woman who had this suffolk kiddushin, the Suffolk Kiddushin, so she can't marry a kohen. If she wants to stay with him, and Mestama she does, right? So they just do another Masa Kiddushin. If they want to call it off, so she has to get a get from him, she can't marry a kohen. Until she gets the Kiddushin, she can't contract marriage with anyone. Somebody else tries to be in the Kadesh her. Right? You, let's say you and your lovely wife are walking to one of the million smachot that that you go to, and some old high school flame sees her, right? And he remembers their old days together, and he pulls out a ring and he says, "Hariat mekudesh li betabatzu." What does it mean? Nothing at all. Why? Because she's already an Eishes Ish. She's already an Eishes Ish. Don't make the joke that you're saying, take her, right? You'd be lost.
Why, if she was Suffolk, if it was Suffolk married in the first place, why wouldn't the second one also be a Suffolk?
Also be a Suffolk, yeah.
And she'd require a get from both.
Exactly.
He says it in the next line.
Exactly.
Sorry. You prepared ahead.
I did.
He prepared ahead and forgot. Exactly. So the whole thing is, and a third guy comes in. So she needs a get from each of them. And if somebody came along and was Mekadesh her in between, she now needs a get from the second one.
She
can't go back to the first one because of the Isser of Machzir Grusha. You can't divorce your wife. You can divorce your wife and then remarry her as long as she hasn't been married in between, right? If David were here, he went to Rochester to see the eclipse. If David were here, he would tell you all the famous cases of people who did this. There are a few like famous cases of these Machzir Grushot.
Did the Muslims do it the opposite way?
Seymour. There was one.
So Rav Ashurbas always jokes about, you know, Mekayim Tariyat Mitzvahs. Does that mean it's a mitzvah to Megaresh my wife so I can bring her back, you know?
I once heard Kalbach say, I was always worried I'd never get to do all Tariyat Mitzvot until my holy ex-wife came along and helped me be Mekayim the mitzvah of Netinat Get.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, this case of Divrei Sofrim, so what does it mean? Rabbi Herschel Schechter from YU just published a book called Divrei Sofrim, not about this specific issue, but it's about the kind of, it's like the mechanic. I haven't finished the whole thing, but it's like essays on the mechanics and dynamics of Torah Shebaal Peh, how change comes about, how halacha responds to things. I think, you know, it's a very strong position that halacha never changes, but it does respond, it does react. But I mentioned this because the title of that, but it's a book in English, but the title is Divrei Sofrim.
So, in Russia, I think, it's better to learn a piece Sofrim, asher misfarim, yeah? Uh-huh. You should learn from the story from your father and your grandfather, yeah, and not be self-deductive and think you know
sure,
it all.
Sure. Yeah, well, this was the point of Chaim Soloveitchik's famous essay, Rupture and Reconstruction, that once we go over to a kind of book culture, through volume book, three volume book on Asher Yotzer, right? On Hagba, there's a book, Hagbu Glila Kehilchasa, it's bigger than Bava Basra. What was that other book? Oh, there was a, I saw this year.
One about dogs.
I mean, there's no end to it. There's no end to these types of books. No, what was it? It was a big fat book on some like minuscule topic in halacha.
Oh, there's one about. I know there's one that came out about Kriya.
About tearing Kriya.
As in Korim Mishtachavim.
Oh.
The Kriya of Ishmael
Esra. Right. Meaning not prostrating on the floor, just where and when to bend your knee during Shemon Esrei.
How?
Yeah. Okay.
It's a book called Losing the Forest with the Trees.
Yeah. So, what was it? I saw it in the library, and it was just so bizarre to me. And it was like the hugest book. It was like 900 pages. I'm forgetting which obscure time, but like there's just no end to, there's no end to, I mean, you know, I mean, there's a book on sitting in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeret, which is not practical for us. Shmini Atzeret means Yom Tov Sheni Shagoliot in Chutz Laretz. Now, the truth is, it's a Gemara, and it's a halachic topic. It's a machlokas whether you should or should not sit in the sukkah in Chutz Laretz on the last day. But the idea that you need a 1,000-page book for it is.
Well, if you're going to collect all the statements of all the Rishonim
and the Achronim and the contemporary poskim and the, yes, right. So anyway, this Rambam in the this Rambam's use in the Mishnah Torah of Divrei Sofrim. So here, look in Sif Mem Gimel. The Aruch HaShulchan, referring to the Rambam, says, "Bezeh shekatav," that the Rambam wrote, "The psulei edut shel divrei sofrim have a suffik kavanato lepsulim derabanan velo lekrovei ha'em." The Aruch HaShulchan says that if you have witnesses that Hazal said are no good, that are posel derabanan. So the Rambam says that krovei ha'em, meaning your relatives on your mother's side, are only posel midivrei sofrim. So what is that? First of all, why are krovim pasul? Why can't you testify at your brother's trial? This is true by the is it? It's not always nogeya bedavar. First of all, nogeya bedavar, okay, if your brother comes to, you know, is in a state to lose or win a lot of money, so you could say, okay, you're in for a cut. But why are you a nogeya bedavar to be aid at your brother's chuppah? You want your brother to be happily married.
Thank you, bro. I don't know. I never think about that.
But you have a sister. How come you couldn't be an aide at her wedding?
She wouldn't have asked her.
I would imagine. You're not impartial.
A lack of impartiality. Yeah.
If it turns to be a problem at some point in time, you'll support your brothers or your relatives.
Yeah. Point of view. Right. So is it that you're like Becheskat Mishaker? Under the right circumstances, we presume you would lie? Or is there just something inherently, we know that you're telling the truth, right? God forbid Reuven is murdered and Shimon is the witness, right? And there's no reason to suspect that Shimon is lying. But his edut in Bet Din is irrelevant, right? But it's not because we suspect that he's lying. There's something inherently unacceptable about the edut of a karov. Or is it that we say no? He's emotionally compromised. He's not objective.
If Shimon gives testimony that Reuven was murdered, I think that's enough to allow Reuven's widow to be married.
Because that's for other purposes. Because in cases of heter aguna, we have a whole different set of rules. In order to allow a woman who otherwise would be an aguna, we accept all type of edut that we wouldn't accept in a case in small claims court. So what's the source? What's the source that krovim are pasul? Krovim are pasul, or at least certain krovim are pasul min haTorah. What's the source for that? It's a posuk in Kitetse. The end of Kitetse, posuk says. Al pishnayim. Why would that? Why would that teach you can't?
It was clearly relatives of posul.
So you can say svarahi lama likra.
It's like, how did you know that Yaakov wore a kippa?
Implicit.
Why did he go out without it?
It's a Yaakov. He'd go out with a kippa.
So the posuk in Perek Kaf Dalet in Dvarim says, "Lo yumtu avot al banim, uvanim lo yumtu al avot." that fathers can't be given the death penalty because of their children. Children are because of their fathers. Ish b'chet'o yumtu. Person is punished for it. Now, what's the pshat of the pasuk?
You don't get punished for it.
Your son commits a crime, you can't be punished, and vice versa.
So the Gemara in Sanhedrin
learns from this pasuk. The drush on this pasuk is posel edus for krovim, right? A person cannot be found guilty and potentially given the death sentence because of his son or his son because of his father.
But the case that you gave is not similar to that. You're talking about where Reuven was murdered.
Brothers.
Testifying about somebody else that killed his brother.
Correct, but in other words, it's about, right? In other words, you might be right. You might
be right. Exact same case.
Reuven kills Levi. Brother Shimon is present.
Okay.
Can he testify? Right? There he's certainly no gay, but that
yeah. Is he the brother of whom? Accused or created?
Or both. Biblically, he's the brother of both. But in my case, I imagine to be the brother of the accused.
Can the brother of the victim testify against the assailant?
That's a good question.
No, that was my first case, which Tzvi objected. Can somebody pour me a stickle of water? Is there? Or just see to the west? So according to the pasuk, who should be posel?
Well,
it's a very paternalistic pasuk, fathers and sons, avot ubanim. So there are opinions that say that the pasul of krovim, psul of krovim for edut, only applies on the paternal side. Now, Chazal had no problem extending it beyond the father-son line, right? In other words, brothers are included, even though that's not obvious in the pasuk. But there are those that say that your
mother's
stepbrother on your mother's side, your maternal grandfather, right, are not pasul le'edut min haTorah, but they are pasul, midivrei sofrim. So it seems that the Rambam is saying. It seems that the Rambam is saying that your maternal relatives are only posel midivrei sofrim. Now, some want to say that divrei sofrim means dirabanan. Others understand that when the Rambam says divrei sofrim, he means what I called dioraita minus. But this is a machlokas. So if you have posel edim because of family relations from the maternal side, that would be a double suffix. Right? In other words, it would be our original case of Kiddushin, which has Pusul Edim, but they're only a Suffolk Pusul Edim. And it's maybe Min HaTorah, they're okay, but it depends on how you define what Divrei Sofrim means. So it would be a funny kind of Sfeik Sveika. I don't know if it's a Sfeik Sveika, because it's a Sfeik Sveika, not about a suffix for Sfeik Sveika. It's kind of objective, right? And as if there's a machlokus between the Rambam and the Ramban, that's not a suffix. You say, maybe it's mutter, maybe it's usser. In other words, if I have a piece of meat, and I don't know which box it came out of, the kosher meat box or the treif box, that's a suffix. Right, it's objectively suffic, right? But if there's a machlokus between the Rambam and the Ramban about whether something is tahor or tame, or machlokus between Rav and Abaye whether something is tame or tahor or kosher or treif, right? That's not the same kind of suffic. That's not a suffic. That's a machlokus. Right? Maybe it's permitted because maybe the halacha follows the lenient rule, but until we determine that, it's not a suffic exactly,
right?
So the Aruch HaShulchan says that Divrei Sofrim is mina Torah, right? It's just not explicit in the Torah, and it's part of the received oral tradition, even though it's not so obvious how that's the case. Others say that it's. By the way, the Rambam says that our way of getting married, kiddushay, every one of us got married with kiddushay kesef. Every one of us with married children, our children got married with kiddushay kesef. A ring was involved. That's how the marriage was contracted. The Rambam says that's divrei sofrim. What does that mean? You're only married derabbanon. You're not married min haTorah. How could that be?
Which aspect? Okay. It's ring or the...
No, kiddushay kesef, getting married with something of monetary worth is
the ring.
No, not the ring per se, but we all did it with a ring. So Rambam says that's midivrei sofrim. So it can't possibly mean that we're all only married derabanan, right?
Because
maybe the Mishnah means Aisha Niknei Midrabanan. Right?
So what's the right to him?
No, so that's the point. That's the Aruch HaShulchan brings this as proof that Divrei Sofrim for the Rambam cannot mean Dirabanan. Right? It just doesn't make any sense. However, there is a machlokus. There is a machlokus. You see, you go on here in Mem Gimel. He says, Klamasha Sofrim, the second to last line, blah, blah, kol davar she'eno mifurash mamash betorah lekro divrei sofrim. Klomar shasofrim, zot omeret hachachamim, kiblu ze bekabbalah, not in mysticism, but by part of the received tradition, ad le Moshe misinai. Ukemisha kore le kedusha kesef medivrei sofrim. Right? And that's in fact what the Rambam says, that kedusha kesef, getting married with something of financial worth, is only divrei sofrim. It's certainly from the Torah, but it's not from the Torah the way that besuko teshvu shivat yamim. We all sat in the sukkah. That's min haTorah. How do you know? It's a pasuk. Right? In other words, how do we know it's min haTorah? The identification of the arba minim. Yeah.
Well, that's what we do. I mean, for us, that's the arba minim.
Yeah, and well, you know, the Gemara in sukkah spends a lot of time saying, how do you know that kapot tamarim is this part of the tree and not that part of the tree? How do you know that pre eitz hadar, there are a lot of pretty. Trees and pretty fruits, right? How do we know identification?
Still considered a doraita.
Correct, because through this principle of the received tradition of identifying what's what.
So what's the difference between that and divrei sofrim then?
No, in other words, that might be, I don't know that the Rambam uses the term divrei sofrim for the identification of the minim, but lema'aseh, it's the same idea. The idea that you have to take arba minim is mufurish bekra. Right? The identification of what each of those things is. It's not just that we forgot the botanological name, right?
Obviously, but almost every mitzvah midoraita that we have, right, is based on divrei sofrim.
Well, yes and no. No, because in some cases we have the midot shetor nidreshet b'hem. There's a pasuk. And what do Chazal do? They kind of like lift the hood, and we look under the hood and see how they derive from the pasuk what the actual practice is. In other beseda, that's halacha l'Moshe Misinai. Halacha l'Moshe Misinai is another way of saying that enachinami the pshuto shel mikra. You land from Mars and you open the Bible in the motel. You cannot possibly know what totafot are. And that's the Ramban. The Ramban is very clear that totafot, we don't even know what the word means, right? And without the received tradition, this is the Gemara in Shabbos. When the Ger comes to Shammai, and says, so not the famous one of he hits him with a stick and he goes to Hillel and says, what's beloved, what's hateful to you, don't do to your fellow man. But the previous line, Hillel starts teaching him Aleph Beis. So he draws on the chalkboard an Aleph and a Beis. L'mocharat ipcha. And the next day he points to what we call a Beis and says, that's Ah. And he points to what we call an Aleph and goes, that's B. But yesterday you told me why? Because what difference does it make? These are all abstract symbols that we agree the proper interpretation of this shape is A, and the interpretation of this shape is B, and the interpretation of this shape is G, and the interpretation of this shape is D. But it doesn't have to be, and we can switch them around, right? We know that there are symbols in other alphabets that look like our symbols, or were even borrowed from Hebrew symbols, but have different pronunciations. It's only because there's a received tradition that what's the meaning of that, Agata? Because what is he pointing to? He's pointing to the black letters on the white cloth, right? Meaning he's pointing to the Sefer Torah. Mm-hmm. And he says, the only way to understand the words on the page
is
based upon the received tradition of what it means. That's the metaphor of Aleph Bet Gimel, right? So Enachinami, that's what Torah Shebal Peh is, right? And if you don't want to read Rabbi Shachter's book, there's another book. The Rambam wrote in the Hakdama LePerush HaMishnah, which might be worth some time taking a few weeks off and just learning that. The Rambam wrote a Perush HaMishnah. He was the first to write a Perush. Their Mishnah had been around for 1,000 years. And no one had written a Perush. The Gemara, of course, is not a Perush on the Mishnah. The first person to write a Perush Mishnah by Mishnah was the Rambam, 1,000 years later. But before he does that, he writes a long introduction to the Hakdama. It's called the Perush Lahakdama, the Hakdama LePerush HaMishnayot, where he gives you the history and mechanics of how Torah Shebal Peh works, how this whole system works. It's worth reading on its, it's worth studying on its own. It was written in Judeo Arabic, translated to Hebrew. It's available in the Mossad of Rav Kook with Mikud, and it's available in English also. So the Beit, so now he quotes, oh, here, Mem Gimel. L'kedusha Kedem David said, Mikol Makom, Yesh Misha Sover, De Krovei Ha'em, Heim Rak Midi Rabbanan. But nevertheless, even though the Rambam calls it Divrei Sofrim, not everybody agrees with the Aruch HaShulchan in the interpretation of what the Rambam means. And there are those that think that the relatives on the mother's side are only Posol Eidut De Rabbanan. The Ramah is among them. The Ramah thinks that your mother's relatives are only Posol De Rabbanan. The Shach on the Ramah disagrees and says it can't be that because it can't be that's what the Rambam means. Right? In other words, all of the posts, not all of those, you see the Ramah went against it. Right? But others say it can't, because if you say Divrei Sofrim is only the Rabbanan, you're painting the Rambam into an impossible corner. So what can you do? So the Ramah can say, the Rambam doesn't have to be fully consistent for me, right? B, Divrei Sofrim can mean different things. But the Rambam and the Shach and others all say that the mother's relatives are posel midivrei sofer, meaning mina Torah, and others say no, that they're only posel dirabanan. All right, we'll stop here. There's more to be said, but it's time to retire the Aruch HaShulchan. Maybe next week we'll do something Pesach related, and then we will get back to Masechet Kiddushin after. Oh, the Altshulers are looking for guests for. Are you still looking?
Yeah.
For Leila Seder. If you call Dichtin, if anybody knows of somebody looking for a place for Seder, the Altshulers have room at the inn.
Yeah.
Okay, Leila Tov.